You're listening to the Ink and Paint Folk podcast, a look at animation through the women and non-binary folk who make it. I'm your host, Cassie Soliday, and today I'm joined by fellow animation writer Chad Quant to talk to you about hashtag New Deal for Animation and hashtag Pay Animation Writers. You may have seen it on social media where folks are sharing some harsh truths about working in animation. And to be honest, it's been really depressing to realize that some things that have been challenging for me or my friends have also been challenging to many. While like I'm glad to read it where I'm like, okay, it's not just me, but it's like really sad, you know? So we don't normally share.
Crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, we're not all crazy. And so we're sharing it now, and it's like a very empowering moment. Like, how have you been feeling about it, Chad?
You really honestly said it very likewise. It was both sad to see that these problems were widespread, and we're going to talk more about them in this episode, but that it was so blatant that it was like, well, I kind of had assumed like, well, maybe it was just my studio, or maybe it was just that one show, and or maybe I'm just unlucky, or it, worse, you maybe blame yourself. You're like, maybe I bring that on myself by not standing up for my things. And you're like, no, this is a thing that has been affecting my friends and colleagues and our friend and colleagues in this whole studio across studios, across networks, across productions. There was a bit of a over the last year or two as the union and guild have gotten more and more united. Wow, we're all dealing with these same things. Mm-hmm. And there are so many of them. There are so many things that are just weighing down on us. I hope this doesn't just come across like, our overtime hours are they're really making it harder for us to file over. No, this is like an untold amount of issues that have been weighing down on crew members across the entire industry.
Yeah. And that overtime is often unpaid. So it's something that needs addressed. Uh-huh. A little bit more background for listeners. Like, so every 3 years, the Animation Guild, which we'll probably refer to as TAG through the episode, and the AMPTP, which stands for the Alliance of Motion Picture and TV Producers, they go into negotiations to renew the contract. So they hash it out. TAG asks for certain things. Producers maybe give some of them. It's a discussion that goes back and forth with their lawyers. So this contract covers every craft in animation at Union Studios. How much money a role makes, the type of tasks positions are able to take on, healthcare and wellness coverage, like a whole bunch of things. So right now we're about 12 days in at the time of this recording. So it's still going on. And from what I understand, it's the longest negotiation process for TAG that they've been through in like over 50 years.
Totally. And it's not even like 12 days straight, which I mean, would probably also be grueling. It is because like the AMPTP are doing negotiations with other craft guilds besides TAG. It's like this weird thing of negotiations may, you know, consist for a couple of days. They don't come to an agreement, thankfully, because we have a lot of things we're fighting for. So then it gets pushed to like, well, we're meeting them again in a couple of weeks because they have other ones to meet with. So which is a strange idea to be rotating negotiations out, but like at least 10 plus days in the room with our guild leadership. And we appreciate them doing that.
Yeah. I feel like our union has never been more organized, which is great. So Chad and I are part of a subcommittee within our union that is organizing the pay animation writers. And we're specific for that push because that's our craft. But there are so many other pushes happening and crafts that also are fighting for things. As while some of this can be, you know, depressing to share, it's also empowering because now that we know we're all feeling this way, we can push to improve it. So people and students hoping to break in, you may be looking at the industry and thinking, whoa, this isn't for me. But what else can I do? And you could totally pivot if that's what you want. You can always pivot. However, if animation is really where you want to be, we want you to know that we're fighting now to improve the situation so it's healthier and more sustainable for mm-hmm. when you get here. So that's why we need your help. And you can help us right now, no matter what your situation is. First of all, follow the Animation Union Twitters, and I'll have links posted in the show notes. There's the main union one. There's tag writers. Storyboard artists also have their own, color designers, the queer tag members, and young workers.
It just goes to show, like what you said before, Cassie, of like how many, well, you and I are both on the animation writer's side, and those are very important things that we're fighting for. There are so many other trades in just the Animation Guild that are fighting for representation. You know, like the color artists have their own issues. And mm-hmm. so we're all trying to lift each other up and make sure that their concerns are heard and also not step on each other. It's kind of been an interesting thing of like polite strength.
Yeah. Because like we all affect one another because we're in the same pipeline. So mm-hmm. it's, and not every show operates the same way, which is interesting too. There's always different emphasis on certain parts of the pipeline. Like if you have staff writers, you know, it's more important that they get the scripts together. But if you only have one story editor rewriting a bunch of freelancers, it often falls on storyboard artists to mm-hmm. fix a lot of issues mm-hmm. that they didn't have time for in the schedule. So it usually comes down to pay inequity, schedules, and burnout. Like a lot of the stuff is burning out people, and it's like an unsustainable situation, right?
Yeah. That's one of the, just jump in. Like that's one of the things I think it's going to be the most of is, you know, we are, I guess, up to debate if we're still in a pandemic or not. I think we're still in a pandemic. And like this industry around the time, like, you know, one of my shows I was working on, we did the entire process in 2020 remotely, all through Zoom. We had the entire writer's room. We had art reviews. Like it has been an entire remote process. I genuinely actually, you know, like working from home because I love wearing PJs, but it was also for our safety, and it required a lot of us to rewire how we live and how our homes operate. The amount of folks I know who like had to like basically jury rig offices or shared offices with their partners to be able to do that. But we kept going, like while other, and this isn't like, oh, we're tough and they're not, but like while live action shows had to stop and scramble and find ways to either put pauses on productions for months, or, you know, it's like why Dairy Girls, I've been waiting for Dairy Girls season 3, it's been a while because they couldn't shoot it live action. Meanwhile, we just kept going in animation. Like we didn't stop at all. There was no like pandemic snow day where we just took several weeks off.
Yeah, and the schedules did not slow down. They were the same schedules, and we're all dealing with this mental health crisis here, you know. And it was really hard. But so follow these, all these tag craft Twitter accounts, you know, like their posts, share their posts. There's a petition going around that supports everyone in animation. Sign that, share it, and, you know, read our stories and add your own if you have any. So now we're going to break all of this down even more to why this negotiation is so important. Mm-hmm. Chad and I are both writers, again, so we'll be mostly focused on the craft of writing and how negotiations affect us and what we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So animation writers make less than live action writers, even though we write for the same screen. We're also in different unions. So why aren't animation writers in the Writers Guild of America?
Great question.
Yeah. Do you have the answer? Because I also have Len Uli's tweet we can reference.
Len probably knows better than I do. I've more just heard rumors and theories. So yeah, what does Len have to say? A great classic writer in our field.
He wrote our childhood, basically.
Yeah.
So he says, there's a long, sad history going back to when animation, which was mostly short subjects and early features, they were written by gag men who later were called animation story persons. The work was under the jurisdiction of the predecessor to today's IATSE Local 839, which is the Animation Guild. So IATSE is like the mother guild of all of these locals, and we're one local. So when TV needed scripts at a faster rate for a shorter production pipeline, those story persons started writing scripts rather than cards on a corkboard. All of the major studios who produce animation are signatory to IATSE's 839's collective bargaining agreement. Members of 839, if they work a certain number of hours during a certain period, participate in the pension health plans. In addition to the studio signatories, there have also always been completely non-union animation houses. Either way, there are no residuals or royalties.
No.
As you know them, that is direct mailbox residuals.
I think the idea of residuals is interesting. Before I came out here, I kind of thought they were just kind of like cool bonuses that you get, right? And if you follow a lot of like Hollywood industry jokes in TV, there's people that make fun of like, oh, I got a residual check for this show that aired in Germany and it got 10 cents. And, you know, like, you know, the check's barely worth cashing. But what this really was that residuals were a way for writers, especially in like live action, to basically continue to live even if they were not working. You know, like I have friends in the live action side that'll work for a live action show, like something on NBC or, you know, FX, and they get residuals. They are, and they're also paid, you know, whatever, 5 to 6 times more for that one episode than we are. And then on top of that, after that show airs and in perpetuity, they get residuals that helps keep them survive. And for years, decades, these writers, that's how they lived out here. They'd only maybe write 1 or 2 episodes of TV a year, but it was the residuals that paid the rent and paid the bills. It wasn't just like a Christmas bonus. This was the way it worked. And like you had said with Len's great breakdown, the way that writing and animation was just seen as a different process at the beginning, it has taken forever for the industry and society to kind of catch up to like, no, this is a full craft, just like the others. And it deserves a living wage.
You know, the residuals go to like the health and pension for the entire animation union, which I think is really cool. Like, that's pretty cool. However, it does make it unsustainable for someone who maybe gets 2 scripts in a year and with like all the staff rooms going to freelance models, which we'll get into a little later. Mm-hmm. So it's just a little harder to stay in our particular craft. So kind of going back to Len's breakdown, he had a bit more to say as well. So at any rate, in the days of only a few broadcast networks and PBS, there was little incentive for the WGA to pursue animation writers, not only because the compensation was much lower, but because federal law prohibited them from poaching members of another union. Only recently, with the advent of streaming, has there been a small opening for the WGA to organize high-end productions, almost exclusively adult animation so far, that are not made by companies that are signatories of the IATSE Local 839 agreement. Such deals make higher fees possible. Again, it is illegal for the WGA to attempt to organize a production at, say, Warner Brothers or Disney. Anybody who tells you this can happen is misinformed. But if there is new production in the works at one of the streamers, the WGA is able to offer help in organizing the show. Both the WGA and Local 839 are trying to organize series produced by and for streamers. It is a healthy competition, as they say, but putting that aside, the Animation Guild is doing an excellent job of highlighting the pay disparity with its Pay Animation Writers campaign. Thanks, Len. Which emphasizes that those who write animation are producing high-quality work despite far lower fees, high-pressure schedules, and a few creative protections. So that's all that.
Even the nature of what is considered high-level shows, like you and I have come up, and our listeners of this show, especially if you are all coming up in this industry or still in school and preparing to come out here, like we have grown up where animation is just as legitimate of a storytelling device as anything in live action. It's not just Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes, which is fantastic. Those shows are great. But things that are out here telling high level complex stories, just as epic and emotional and award-winning as any Game of Thrones or Mad Men. And I think because of that, it's been hard for animation craft people to have their work taken as seriously. That's well deserved.
Yeah. And because we've had this origin story for where our agreements on our minimum pay has come from, it's already set a precedent that you can pay animation writers less. So it's really hard to get parity when we haven't had to pay you that much before. Why would we need to pay you that much now? So if you think about it, the writers who write for the live-action Star Trek show make more than the writers of the animated Star Trek series.
Boy, do I know that for sure.
Do you want to talk about that at all?
Sure. Yeah, not to, you know, I recently wrote and produced on Star Trek Prodigy for Nickelodeon and Paramount Plus Sign. And it's a fantastic series. A full team and crew. We had a full writer's room. And I'd say about half of our writer's room were people that primarily worked in live action. Folks had written on shows like Black Sails and The 100. And those shows are fantastic and just as worth of artistic merit and skill as any of the shows that the other half of us had worked on. Like, I had worked on Trollhunters before that. And it's still 22 minutes of stories with A, B, and C plot arcs and just as complex work, and the writer's room doing, as for Star Trek, doing just as much as anyone on, say, the other Star Trek live action shows like Discovery or Brave New Worlds. Those are all fantastic crews. And this is by no means disparaging what they're doing. It's more just seen by contrast, we are doing the same work as them and getting paid a fraction of it. And that's not fair.
No, there are no differences in the script formats here. Like, if anything, in my opinion, like, animation is often more stepped out, so the page length more accurately matches the time spent through a sequence that we see on screen.
Yes, yes. This is not about saying pay Star Trek Discovery writers less. It is pay us on Star Trek Prodigy and other shows that are animated as much as everyone else gets. Mm-hmm. Because those shows are aired on your streaming services just like anything else. Like, there's no difference to you guys.
So staff writers versus freelance. In live action, writers often get script fees on top of their weekly staff fees, so the staff fee alone is like $3,964 up to $5,059. So you could be a staff writer on a show and not write a script, you know, right. Like, that's separate. But in animation, we just continuously write scripts and often have, like, I want to say hundreds, but, like, I know people who have written hundreds of scripts and are still, like, having trouble piecing together their career, right? Like, yeah. It's kind of insane. In animation, just to give you some context, writers get the weekly fee only, which is $2,064. So this is staff positions right here. So in regards to freelance rates, animation writers make 26% to 66% less. Like, for a half hour script, animation writers get $9,099, while live action makes $12,290 up to $27,100. And yes, the freelance rate for animation seems like a nice chunk of money at first, but when will you get another freelance script? Like, if you get 3 in a year, I hear you're killing it, you know? And the rate is lower if the episode you're writing is shorter too, like if it's an 11 minute. So out of that chunk of money you get from freelance, your federal estate taxes come out, as well as 20% to your manager, agent, and 5% if you have a lawyer, which can leave you with much less. I think we did the math in our group, and it was like $15 and somewhat cents an hour after all of that. So it's, like, really hard to make a living off that in LA in particular. And yes, we could move somewhere else in theory, but also our union is a local. So, like, in our contracts, we need to be local to do the work.
Oh, and also, I say the studios want you to be here, even though this is a separate topic on how I believe you could totally run shows remotely in any part of the country or any part of any country as it is. But this is a thing where, despite all of this working from home and remotely, the animation studios and entertainment industry, because it's centered in LA, they want you to work here, even if they will never have you come into the studio other than maybe for a first meeting. And then all the rest of your work is done remotely. They want you to be in this city. And that means living here in this cost of living that is proportionally higher than other cities. It's not just to be like, love the beach, right? Like, I haven't gone to the beach in 5 years. I just want to write cartoons. That's why I live in this city.
Exactly. In regards to qualifying for insurance, because this is a hard lesson I learned recently where I almost lost my insurance because I almost didn't get enough qualifying hours. It was so scary. I had no idea this was a thing I should fear. But so for one union outline and script, like at an 11 minute, you know, our, I forget, is it MPIHP or something, like our insurance provider, they give you, they're not an insurance provider. It's like a health and pension company or something. Anyways, they give you 200 hours that goes towards qualifying for your health insurance. If you don't work enough in a quarter, you can lose that insurance. So yeah, I didn't get enough freelance. I barely made it is basically what it was. Because you have to have, I think, 400 hours per quarter in order to, you know, qualify for the next 6 months.
And that's a sign kind of for roughly for like how much each of these gigs are. It's not like, oh, it was your fault for taking too fast on that freelance script. It is, that is what the hours allotted for each of these. There's all of these things come with, you know, yeah, not just the relative suggestions of what pay should be, but how many hours that earns. And we have people in our union, like writers, who are struggling with, you know, they'll write 2 animated features a year, which is insane to do. Mm-hmm. And incredibly hard to do. It's very rare to even get 1 animated feature script written a year. And they're barely or not qualifying for health insurance. And those are full-time jobs. But because the way the hours are structured and because how much money is earned through those, all of these things contribute to people who are working just as much like any other kind of 9-to-5 job, but they are saying you don't get general health. That is, you know, what's keeping us all alive.
And I feel like it's, I mean, because if you're in a staff role and your show lasts for a while, like, you just keep rolling in the hours. But if it's freelance, you don't get the hours until you get paid. Like, they don't log them, right? Because they're not reported. So kind of give, like, a little anecdote. I got hired for a freelance script in August. I didn't write the script till November, and I didn't get paid for it until January.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
You can get, you know, an offer if you're lucky, you know. So it can run the gamut. You could also get hired, you know, on Friday and start writing the premise on Monday. But, like, you just really don't know. It's something you can't control.
Yeah, there's one more thing I really highlight. You already said it, Cass, but I just want to make sure, because we threw a bunch of, like, numbers out there, and I'm bad at even processing those as it is. But when we're talking about this discrepancy between live action writers and animation writers, you know, the default of, oh, if you write a script, a freelance script, let's say you write a, I want to name a show, but then also don't want to make it sound like I'm picking on a show. So let's say you write a freelance script for it. You're not on staff, but that's a freelance. Yeah, you'll get a couple $1,000s for that one time thing. And that seems great. But like you just said, it after you spread it out over a couple months, that's not nearly as much money a week as you think it is. Versus you might be lucky and get to be on a staff where you are getting paid weekly. But as much as live action, where you would normally get the best of both worlds, you're a staff writer. And then when you write a script with your episode with your name on it, you get that big bonus that is way bigger than an animation writer's fee. And then you get residuals. It is a thing that we are fighting for in this industry, to be on staff and get script bonuses. Mm-hmm. That is a thing that is not a guaranteed thing right now in the union. That is up to people individually fighting with their reps and things on contracts, because mm-hmm. we don't have that locked in like the Writers Guild does.
Yeah. And try to negotiate script fees on top. Let's normalize that.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Going back to how much, you know, we typically make freelance, like, you also need to take into account how expensive LA is. And I already mentioned TAG is a local, and studios do want us to be local. So you need to earn, I don't even know if I should go into these numbers regarding the house and stuff.
Inexpensive, y'all. It is expensive to live out here.
So, like,
there's a housing crisis on top of all of this.
Right. So you need to earn like $4,200 per week to buy a 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom house in Los Angeles, which, you know, often go for like $1 million, right? So $4,200 is also what our freelance rate is for an 11-minute script, mm-hmm. which the union says should take us 200 hours to write. So there are only 168 hours in a week. So using the union's mm-hmm. math, selling enough freelance animation scripts to buy a 1-bedroom, 2-bathroom house in Los Angeles is physically impossible. No wonder we're burning
also,
out.
No wonder we're burning out. Also, like, even if that would be nice, you're making that money. You got a job, you're making that money a week. You can't just bring your, like, I just got a new job, I moved to LA, I'm going to buy a house. They're like, wait, you need to have, you know, 20% of the house down. That's $100,000. You're like, I don't have that. You need to have so much saved up that is not currently possible when the Animation Guild and these fees are already getting so little. It is a losing battle that we are trying to right. For sure.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm not scaring people from ever wanting to move to LA, but it's important to know that there is a huge barrier to entry. And if I can get on a pedestal a little bit, I have been bothered by, not only is that so tough for you and me and everyone who's made it out here, but that barrier to entry must be keeping so many folks from different economic, like, climates and backgrounds mm-hmm. just from ever getting a shot out here. I am incredibly lucky that I was able to have some money saved up, and I friends whose couches I could crash on for my first year out here as I saved up money and got, you know, rented an apartment. But that was with me being lucky to have just even that capital. And the amount of talented artists and writers who we are deprived of even having in this industry because that barrier to entry is already so high, that's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. It's another reason why we need higher fair deals.
Yeah, 100%. And like, you know, you can't control when you get another freelance script or staffed again.
No.
Like, all we can really control is, you know, meeting more writers, keeping connected to our friends we've made in the industry, and writing new samples and trying to get people to read them, as well as pitching our own shows. And to be honest, mm-hmm. like, I feel like I've been more busy between when I'm between jobs than when I'm like staffed. How do you feel about that?
Same. I just wrapped on a show in like December, right before the holiday. I'm like, cool. All right, time for me to go full Big Lebowski slumber time. Just gonna wear pajamas and walk around. And then I haven't relaxed a single day because you have that constant nipping at your heels of like, I gotta get the next gig because I have rent or mortgage to pay. I have groceries to get for. Mm-hmm. Like, There's no time for Elden Ring. I got to write right now. It's definitely a thing where it never allows people in industry time to have much of a rest. Yeah, when you're on staff, they're pushing you so fast that you're burning out, and when you get off, you're racing to get to the next one.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've even mentioned, like, or we briefly mentioned how, like, staff rooms are disappearing. Like, they're choosing, yes. Studios are choosing to have freelance-only rooms. You know, as we've pointed out with, you know, how much you get paid on freelance and, like, the rate of living out here, it's very unsustainable to keep that going. Yeah, it's a real bummer.
Should we illustrate a little bit of the, it is a huge bummer. I worked in both. I am a huge... I think proponent of writer's rooms. It's so much better for the process and the show to have people who are getting used to the difference between having like someone who has to come in, it's their first freelance script, they have to immediately jive with like the voice of the show and understand the showrunner and head writers and directors' kind of sensibilities. It's an uphill battle just to do that versus being part of a staff where you get to know each other. You're more attached to what's going on in the other stories. You're getting a sense for like the language of the show. I genuinely believe the art is always stronger if you have a staff writer or a staff. That could be anywhere from 3 to 15 people, depending on the show. But because it's that's 15, a lot. That's about as big as I've seen it go.
That's amazing.
You know, like I think Star Trek Prodigy, for example, there was what, 10 of us. Numbers get confusing when we have writers teams because they usually count as one seat at the table, so to speak.
Right. And just real quick, if you're a writing team, don't you only get paid the rate of one writer?
Unfortunately, yes. You are usually, I used to be part of a writing team and we were often splitting the fee that one writer would get. The only saving grace at all is they would at least, because, you know, talk about how hours are confusing, we would both get our hours counted separately. So we weren't splitting like insurance hours and that sort of thing. But I mean, there's a reason why for a lot of writer teams, for some rooms, they're like, yeah, we got 2 for 1, you know, like you were a bargain deal. And that's not saying you shouldn't be a writer's team, but you need to know that there is that kind of working against you and that you'll probably need to negotiate for a higher wage with that in mind, mm-hmm. right? Like we can't fully split this. Can you at least give us like 1.5 times what you would normally pay us just to help make it a little bit better? But yeah, you're taking a hit there as well. Yeah, woof.
Thanks
indeed.
For explaining that. Well, I thought that was the case, and I think a lot of people don't know that.
There's a lot of strengths to having a writer's team and helping each other be accountable, but there's also some cons to it. But just the regarding the staffing, yeah, it's even though it's you're not paying people that much per week, and all being the studios have preferred more and more to save money by having purely freelance rooms. And for shows that you would be surprised are purely freelance, serialized, and ones where there's overarching arc plots. It's a lot easier to be a freelance on, say, an episode of SpongeBob, where in that 11 minutes, it's a pretty self-contained story. But even a little more serialized stories, switching to freelance writers, where there is maybe one head writer or story editor, that is part of the crew, and then everything else is freelanced for a much cheaper rate. They don't have to pay all of these other fees. And it not only hurts the process, it hurts all the writers because, yeah, they're fighting over morsels of pay versus a more consistent livelihood.
Wow, that's shocking.
Yeah, you know, one of the other things we want to talk about, because there's so many issues that we are fighting for New Deal for animation, but one that has been really hitting me hard is the difference of terminology about seasons. Just today on Twitter, a lot of animation writers have all been weighing in. It's been really great to see. It was spurred this time about news about Cuphead, the animated series on Netflix. That's amazing, and a fantastic crew made that whole thing. But how they had 48 episodes, and it was being announced as like, oh, the next season is coming out later this year. But people on the crew have been smart to point out that, like, well, when we worked on it, it wasn't another season. That was still, those episodes that are coming out later were still season one. And that might just be a bit of like, oh, well, I guess they're just getting the numbers mixed up. But that is a huge deal for animation teams, both writers, directors, board artists, because the terminology on what counts to as a new season is worked into most crew members' contracts. We don't, you know, we don't work at the same companies often, where say if you worked at, you know, an accounting firm, you're kind of expected like, well, I'm two years in, I get my raise to just really to accomplish for cost of living. Since we don't have more consistent work like that, what usually comes through is you negotiate well, if this show is successful, you'll pay me more for the next season and the next season after that. And these are pretty modest increases, really more just matching inflation at most, as opposed to actually rewarding someone for being part of a winning, quote unquote, production. And studios have gotten around this over and over again by just ordering a batch of seasons and calling it one season. I can say that every single show that I have worked on, I love those teams and those productions, but I know that the studios also definitely were calling them season one when there was probably three seasons in there. And that is, and they would release it like three seasons. I'll be honest, Star Trek Prodigy is coming out with another batch of 10 episodes later this year. Really proud of those show and heard of those episodes that I worked on as a producer. But that's to them at the studio is considered just, oh, it's just part two of season one. When I think anyone watching it can tell, no, that's a new season. It had a full arc and a climax, and those first 10 episodes was one season, and you are releasing these next 10 as another season. And they're doing that in a way to prevent all of us on that team from getting a pretty minor bump for our work. And not just to put on Star Trek Prodigy, this has been the case on every show I've worked on out here. It is constantly an issue, and I'm glad that we are all talking about it, because I'm realizing it is the case for anyone with multiple season orders that they are getting screwed on this, and it's not fair.
Yeah, and another thing that usually gets negotiated between seasons is like moving up the ladder, like getting a better yes. title, as well as, you know, the bump in pay.
Totally.
And in animation, there's actually not that many different there's not a lot of titles to even get. Like in live action, they'll have like staff writer, story editor, co-producer, and it goes up from there. I might be missing things. Mm-hmm. I'm an animation writer.
No, you're yeah, but and yeah. even the lower ones, just the default of like writer's assistant up to maybe a term that's being used now is like junior writer or into staff writer. Those are things that on a live action show, it'd be much more segmented. You were a writer's assistant on season one. They reward you by promoting you to staff writer on season two. By the time your show is going up to season, you know, three and four, you're not just a staff writer, you're getting producer credits, and your pay increases going up. And because we are counting everything as, you know, one season, it's preventing people from lower positions from having a very natural progression.
Yeah. And writer's assistants often get paid much, much lower. Like that's a, mm-hmm. that's a, mm-hmm. A staff support production position. And mm-hmm. depending on the team, you might not get that bump to writing. And don't even get me started on junior writing. Like, there's this thing.
Yeah, that's a new thing. Yeah.
It annoys me so much because you could be like a junior writer or an apprentice and be writing scripts that will go to air. But it's like you just wrote an episode just like a writer would have. Like, so why am I getting paid differently if no one like really mentored me through this? Because there's a natural mentorship between a story editor and their writer, and where you're learning to better write the way they need you to for the show or what they prefer. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if it's the same interaction as what a full writer would be doing, why is there the pay difference and the title difference?
Totally. And some of this does fall on, you know, show leadership and producers and showrunners and EPs to be mindful of that. But on the same time, like, without having anything set as standards and without clear, you know, hierarchies and tracks to be promoted, it is way too easy for these lower positions that are doing amazing work and not getting paid enough to just kind of fall through the cracks. All the more reason why we have a guild to stand up for people who can't speak up or are getting, you know, missed.
Yeah. There's strength in numbers. Like, just one of us standing on the street yelling about this, so we'd be like, oh, there's something wrong with them. But more people is like, oh, this is a thing. And, you know, that beloved side letter N, one more thing to, you know, bitch about here. Like, streaming is no longer an experiment. Like, it makes money. Like, this is a thing. All the networks are doing their own streaming services. And all of these positions in animation are paid less than union minimum for these streaming projects.
Yeah, Cassie, can you explain a little bit what side letter N means?
It's the projects for streaming, right? It's just, okay, yeah. So side letter N is like this little space within the contract that was created to be like, well, we don't know if the streaming project experiment is going to work out, so we don't want to pay full price for the talent that we're hiring to work on this. And often, you know, especially in the beginning, I feel like it's evened out now between veteran and new people into the industry. But a lot of the time, they would hire people right out of college or their first job in animation. And, you know, you're just happy to be there. You're bright-eyed, bushy-tail, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing it. But you're getting paid less than everyone else in the industry for working on projects that are going now to the same streaming services. So it's just very unfair.
The terrible term that I came up hearing was new media, which is probably where that letter N came from.
Oh, right.
Even though it kind of funnily, you know, lies over with Netflix. That's where my brain always goes first.
Yeah, me too.
But that's the same thing as Netflix and when Hulu. Back in my day, Hulu was just a website you went to and you got to watch shows for free. You could watch 30 Rock with no commercials. Like, there was this whole, those were the days. And like, but because there was this era only for a couple of years, but where when these rates were getting locked in, it was seen by studios as an experiment. Like you said, Cassie, as this is new, or like, oh, this is on YouTube and we don't really know if that really means anything. Like, man, Cobra Kai is now on Netflix, but that was on YouTube. And that became an award-winning show. That was a YouTube original. But because it started as this, like, oh, well, because it's an experiment or because it's new media, we shouldn't have to pay anyone as much as we would even for normal process. So now picture all of the ways that new media live action shows are cut down. Combine that with animation, new media, quote unquote, animation is insultingly low wages for people. Even for people who just out of college or people who are in college. College is expensive, y'all. Mm-hmm. Art school is expensive.
I'm still paying my student loans. a decade into working, okay?
Yeah, it is a thing where even though the studios have adjusted and they consider streaming just part of the industry now, they are not paying us in a way that reflects that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is pretty tip of the iceberg. Like, these are the major things that, like, we're fighting to improve. But, like, all of our crafts in the union, pay has not changed that much since the 90s, which is, like, kind of wild to think about. That you could have started in the 90s as an animation writer or a storyboard artist or any of these roles, and today you're probably barely making over what you started at. So... Mm-hmm. If you can, which you probably can. Follow the Animation Union Twitters. Again, I'll have links in the show notes. Sign our petition that supports everyone in animation. Like and share our stories, add your own, or tweet why you support New Deal for Animation.
F yeah. F
yeah. Okay, so is there anything else that you would like to add?
You know, I hope this isn't too terrifying. Cassie just told me before I came on that, you know, a lot of people listening to this are people who are coming up in animation or are in college. And I'm like you too, where it can sound really scary. When I was in college, it was around the 2008 writer's strike, which was about the entire industry and actually probably more live action than animation at that point. But it felt kind of strange to be on the sidelines and just watching these people that I admired, you know, picket outside studios for weeks, just standing up for a higher pay. If anything, that didn't deter me from wanting to come out here. It made me feel better that there is a full community of folks who will fight alongside me for things that we deserve. So hopefully that all of this goes the same way to you, aspiring writer or animator or director, that there is a whole community of animation nerds who love this craft, who love this industry and are fighting for it to be as great as possible.
Yeah, we don't want to leave. So we're going to try to make it better.
Totally. Yeah, thanks for having me on, Cassie. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much, Chad. This was a lot easier to talk about with you here. So
likewise.